Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel, Perek Mem Hei, the 45th chapter of Yechezkel. This is in the section of Yechezkel from the chapter Mem to Mem Ches, which deals with the future third Beis HaMikdash. We've dealt with the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, we've dealt with a little bit of the role of the Kohanim. Now we're going to be focusing on actually the city of Yerushalayim and the dedication of the Mizbech and of the temple. So this actually, the second part of this perek, moving into perek Memvavi, actually acts as the Haftarah of Shabbos HaChodesh. And we'll see it does relate a little bit to Pesach and the month of Nisan, which obviously is significant to that period of time. The first section of this perek actually deals with the area of the future Yerushalayim. It's quite different to the way we see it and expect it today. So here's how it goes. We're now talking about the first section, which runs from Pasuk Aleph to Ches, which deals with Yerushalayim. So let's jump straight in. Yechezkel is told that Bahapilchem es ha'aretz benachala, when you're going to divide the land into its inheritance. We know that the land, as is explained by the Mefarshim, based on the past, is divided by the goral, by the lottery. So the way it's going to be is that of the land, there's going to be torimu terumah la'Hashem. There's going to be a section of the land which is going to be holy. This is going to be the area of Yerushalayim. So the way it works is the following. There's actually going to be three strips of land, which are going to be one above the other. So they're running east-west, strips which run from the east to west, and here's how it works. The first of these strips is going to be a 25,000 amma by 10,000 amma. So it's east to west is the long way, and a height of 10,000 amma. This is where the Mikdash and the Harabais will be. And surrounding the Mikdash and Harabais is a very small 50 amma Migrash, which is a sort of area around it. But the rest of the area is going to be the land for the Kohanim to live. The second strip is going to be another 25,000 amma by 10,000 amma, just below it. And this will be where the Levium live for their cities. In the past, the Levium used to live in cities scattered around all of Eretz Israel. It seems that this is going to be the main predominant place where the Levium are going to be living, which is going to be in this large area of 25,000 by 10,000 amma. And finally, there's a lower strip just below this core, which is 25,000 amma by 5,000 amma. This is the area where the rest of Israel will be able to access, and this is going to be the city of Yerushalayim. Which means, if you think about this in general, that means to say the area of Yerushalayim is 25,000 by 25,000, because the width of each strip is 25,000 amma. And the depth of the first one is 10,000, and another 10,000 and 5,000, giving us a large square of 25,000 amma. What does that look like in contemporary measurements? So let's going with the assumption of Rav Moshe Feinstein's amma, which is 21.25 inches, which is just short of 2 feet per amma. So 25,000 amma looks like 44,271 feet, which is equivalent to just under 8.4 miles, which means to say that the large area of Yerushalayim will be 8.4 by 8.4 miles, which is roughly the area of 70.5 square miles of city. Just to give you a sense of what it looks like today, the perimeter wall of the old city today is 2.8 miles, with a sum total of 0.35 square miles of the old city of Yerushalayim. At its peak in the Second Temple era, we know that the city covered an area of 0.77 square miles. That was the biggest that Yerushalayim was, with an inhabitants a population of over 200,000 in the times of antiquities. Today, the modern Yerushalayim is measured at 48.3 square miles, which means to say that's still shy of what this future projection of Yerushalayim is going to be. This is clearly a colossal description of Yerushalayim in the future. The next point in this section is that we're told in Pasuk Zayin, v'la nasi, and to the nasi, mizeh u'mizeh l'trumas ha'kodesh v'la'chuz ha'sa'ir. The nasi is going to have area on this side and that side, which is going to be holy. What does that mean exactly? So what the Mefarshim explain over here is, the Rashi explains very explicitly in Pasuk Zayin, that we're going to see in the coming prakim that Israel is going to be redivided among the tribes in a different way than the way we've seen it up till now. In the past, it was divided based on the amount of population of either tribe at a certain point in time, either the leaving Mitzrayim or entering the land of Israel. And it was also based on the quality of the land. So if it would be a very fertile land, there would be less of it. If there was arid land, it would be more of. So there was a lot of different aspects which went into the division of the land the first time. This way of description of the land in the future is actually going to be 13 strips of land, which are going to be east-west strips going from the east side to the west side of Israel, one above the other, and each one's going to belong to a different tribe. We'll see the specifics as we get there. And the 12 are going to go to the different tribes, but the 13th one is going to actually belong to the Nasi, to the this individual called the Nasi, barring the area of Yerushalayim, which is in the middle. So Yerushalayim is going to be the full height of one of these strips, which is this 8.4 mile square in the middle, about 8.4, which is the height of each one of the strips. So, but on the area on either side, moving to the west where the Mediterranean Sea is, in the east on the easterly border, is going to belong to the Nasi, which, by the way, is a large area. Who is this Nasi? So Rashi says he's not sure. Later on in Pasuk Yud Zayin, he says it could be the Melech, or it could be the Kohen Gadol. Very interesting. And as the Malbim points out, this is potentially, we're talking about the Melech HaMashiach as an example over here. So, we move now into the next section of the Perek, which runs from Pasuk Tes to Yud Zayin. And in this section, we're told about what the leadership of Klal Yisrael. We're told, Yechezkel tells us, Komar Shem Elokim, Rav Lochem Nesiyei Yisrael, Chamos Vashot Hasir Mishpat Utztaka Asu. The bad leaders, remove the bad leaders and their habits of Yishod Vashever, Chamos and Shod, which is bribery, corruption. You need to institute honesty. You need to institute justice. Harimu Gerusha Eseichem Me'alami. Return or take out all the confiscated land that you took away from our people. Clearly referring to the past, where the leaders of Israel were very corrupt and they took advantage of their power, and the lower class who had no way to seek any form of justice. So this seems to be a call to the future. The Mitzvot actually points out that it might not be a call to the future of the times of Mashiach, but it may actually be a call to those Jews living in Persia now, saying, when you get back to the land of Israel, work yourselves out. But then the section goes on to say that there's a responsibility of Mosnei Tzedek, Eifas Tzedek, Hin Abas Tzedek. All the measurements should be equal. All the measurements should be calibrated. Nobody's going to be cheating or scooping off the top or using thicker kalim than what they've reported as having. And then there's going to be this what seems to be a tax. There's a certain amount of oil and flour and animals which go to the Nasi. And what's the Nasi supposed to do with them? He's going to have to bring the karbanos from this tax for all of Klal Yisrael. So the Radak points out that this is for the initial fund of the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Nasi is going to be supervising that, and that's why the taxes go to him for that responsibility. The Abarbanel points out a very interesting thing here, and that is on the one hand, we're talking about the lack of corruption of leaders. At the same time, we're giving this leader an incredible amount of land. I mean, land and tax, what's going on over here? So Abarbanel says that maybe when you have the Melech Mashiach, or this Kohen Gadol in the future, it's going to be that there's going to be sufficient assets that this leader will not need to extort or take advantage of people, because the leadership and the great responsibilities which will come with it will allow for will also give them the flexibility not to be able to have unfair expectations in terms of what they're supposed to be doing and achieving. Very complicated, as we know that Abarbanel himself lived through Ferdinand and Isabella, who he tried to negotiate with to avoid the Spanish Inquisition unsuccessfully, and he is very hesitant about kings and monarchs in general with unilateral power. Okay, the last section of the Perek moves from Psukim Yudches to the end of the Perek, and it's Chof Hei. And in this section, we talk about the laws of the Karbanos. We're told that Berishon Be'echad LaChodesh, on the first month, on the first of the month, you're going to bring this bull and as a chatas in the Mikdash, as a sin offering in the temple. And there's a whole description of how you're going to take the blood after it's being sprinkled and take it to the doorposts of the base of the Mikdash or the Chatzer HaPinimis. And you're going to do this again. You're going to do this again on the 7th of the month. Then we're told that on the 15th of the month is going to be a Chag Pesach, and you're going to eat matzos, and the Nasi is going to bring, or for himself and for the people, another parachatas, another bull, which is a sin offering. And during the 7 days of the festival, you're going to bring these shivas parim v'shivas elim tmimim le'yam. They're going to say seven bulls, seven rams every single day, and a chatas of sirizim of every day. And finally, on Sukkot, on the 15th of that month of Tishrei, you're going to make a similar karbonos. So there's a few questions we can think about over here. So first of all, why is Nisan the month that this all starts on? So the Radak quotes the famous Chazal, which is, Banisan Nigalu, in Nisan, Bnei Yisrael were redeemed in the Exodus from Egypt, and Benisan Asidu Nigoel, and in the future we're also going to be redeemed in Nisan, and that's why this whole process starts in Nisan. Why is it mentioned the first of the month and the seventh of the month? Why are there two separate korbanos being brought about Kapara? So the Rashi says, no, it means to say that there's a seven-day process of inauguration and purification of the Mikdash. So it's going to go from the first to the seventh. Not that it's staccato, one and seven. The Radak says it because the Mikdash is going to arrive. People will be so excited, they'll be just trying to get in, and there'll be mistakes made in the first few days. So you need to just clarify and clean it again on the seventh day because of people who are going to enter in inadvertently in order to fix that up. It is interesting that why is it that in this section we're told about Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot, but we're excluding Shavuot. Shavuot doesn't seem to feature in this. Moreover, the korbanos which are described over here to bring on Pesach and on Sukkot are not the regular korbanos. This is not the same pattern or constellation of korbanos that we see any other time. So what is going on over here? How is this working? Zechida in his commentary called the Chumash Anach quotes a number of later Mepharshim who make various suggestions. He quotes Harav Be'er Yitzchak, who says that, you know what, in the future, on Sukkot, we're not going to need the 70 bulls for the nations, which we famously bring for the 70 nations, and that's why we're not going to bring it in the future. He says himself, the Chida says, look, to me, li hadal hanira, in my impoverished opinion, in my humble opinion, I would say that no, these are not the korbanos which are going to supplant the korbanos of Sukkot and of Pesach. These are, in fact, additional korbanos which are part of the inaugural process of the Mishkan, which will be in above and beyond the regular korbanos of this time. Obviously, this relates to Shabbos HaChodesh and the beginning of the month of Nisan, which is why this acts as the Haftarah of that time. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.